Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, April 17th, 2013, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That's me.
So, you're not well educated, you have almost no experience, and you can't write.
Holy cow, you got all that from just those two sentences. Well, there you go. Holy cow, I have another one of them twofer shows for you today. My guest is the extraordinarily talented erotic photographer and author who is making his second appearance on the show. Last time he was here was way back in May of 2011. And, like last time, our conversation conveniently falls into both the erotic mind and the sex education series, don't you know? I am thrilled to welcome back the multi-talented Blade T. Bannon to the show. Blade has two new books out to tell us about. The first, a coffee table book of erotic photography titled Daddy Hunt. And the second is a stunning new volume of fictional nonfiction titled Primal Fear.
Just what do you want from me anyway? Permission to be a fake? Stop whining. Do something about it.
You sure know how to make friends and influence people. Hey, and listen, to add some spice to an already delectable show, Blade treats us to a reading from Primal Fear. You do not want to miss this, sex fans. Blade invites you to visit him on his site, bladetbannon.com, where you can purchase all of his books, both photography and nonfiction. Today's show is once again brought to you by the granddaddies of male masturbation toys, the amazing Fleshlight and Fleshjack.
I am beginning to repel people I'm trying to seduce.
Gee, I can't imagine why. You know, for those of you who have never seen one of these brilliant devices, let me describe it to you. It looks like a huge flashlight, thus the very clever names, don't you know? Inside the durable plastic case, there is a soft, fleshy inside called Super Skin. And trust me, this stuff is aptly named. It is phenomenal. But that's just the beginning. What makes the Fleshlight and Fleshjack so freaking amazing is that you get to design and personalize just about every aspect of the unit you purchase. Now, what other toy company allows you to do that? And remember, if you make your purchase by clicking on the Fleshjack banner in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com, a portion of that sale will come back to us as support for these marvelous shows. Now, you can underwrite this important sex-positive effort and squeeze one out at the same time. How swell is that? Okay, on with the show. Welcome back to Dr. Dick's Sex Advice, Blake. And it's so good to have you. How does it feel being had?
Well, you know, I always enjoy being had, especially in the right position.
Isn't it the truth?
Barrier, you know?
Exactly. So before we get started, I just want you to know that you are among the very few select people who have appeared on my show more than once. And last time you were here, way back in May 2011, we talked about your photography and a book you had recently published, My Mentor, My Guide, Handbook for Daddies and Boys of the New Generation. This time around, I want to come back to both of those themes. Photography, because you have a new book published by Bruno Gmunder. It's called Daddy Hunt. And you also have another book of fictional nonfiction hitting the bookshelves called Primal Fear. Holy cow! When do you have time to touch yourself in purely with all that going on?
Believe me, I do that as often as possible. Oh, man.
Yes, we're going to get more to that soon, I'm hoping. So let me first turn our attention to your book with Bruno Gmunder titled Daddy Hunt. The blurb on the book reads, "My heart belongs to Daddy, And it takes just one look at the pictures of Blade T. Bannon to know why. These bulky fellows and their rough sex appeal are simply irresistible. You will hardly find another book that bursts with testosterone and as much as Daddy Hunt does. And it's hard to think of something more enticing than going into the lion's den where Daddy's going to teach you a lesson you won't soon forget. Daddy Hunt will enthrall any man who is willing to subject himself to lust and pleasure. Woo! How you do go on, sir. Just reading that made me moist, don't you know?
Well, in more ways than one.
So tell me, how did you score Bruno Gmunder? He's probably the best respected name in art photography publishing in the whole freaking world. And congratulations on that, by the way.
Yeah, that was a big surprise. I was really shocked. They were putting out their feelers for putting together a conglomeration of international work.
Uh-huh.
They said, just go ahead and send in 10 images, and if you're lucky, you'll make the book. And I'm like, if I get one,
yeah,
I will be over the moon.
Yeah.
And the book came out, and some of the leading photographers had 6 pictures, and I had 6.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, whoa. Whoa, 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 that's amazing. They like my stuff. They really like me, you know?
Yes,
they like it. So I turned around, and they had a couple other projects, and I said, well, why don't I shoot for a solo book? I mean, the worst they can say is no. Mm-hmm. And they went for it, and they were a great crew, and they were really nice. We had a lot of fun together putting together the book.
So last time you were on the show, I asked you if being a model yourself influences your photography. Can you speak to that again?
Oh, yeah, definitely does. You put yourself in the model's shoes, and being a model, I learned a lot of the traditional classic poses when I did nude modeling for the colleges and their sketch artists and stuff.
Right, exactly that.
But also, you know, you understand that people actually, when they're comfortable, they photograph a little better. Unless they want to be uncomfortable, you know.
Right, exactly.
You need to be tied up badly to get this look of suffrage, you know.
That's right, right.
So, yeah, so that's influenced my photography, and I really enjoy the interplay between being a photographer and the model, because I can understand their point of view as well.
I was reading the amazing art historian Grady Harp had written something about Daddy Hunt. He said, this book is filled with hairy, rough trade types, though without a doubt many of these models are gentle, caring guys in reality. The photos are posed both indoors and out, dressed and undressed, aroused and at ease. And in every full-page image there is personality pouring out all over the place. Blade T. Bannon became highly respected with the success of his being featured in Hair, Hairy Men in Gay Art, and Fur, The Love of Hair, and in Turn On, Muscles, all published by Bruno Gmunder, as well as his own earlier successful publication, My Mentor, My Guide. That's absolutely amazing. I mean, you couldn't pay for better publicity than that.
I was blown away. I had no knowledge of that review. I'm like, oh, wow, thank you. You know? I was like, really?
And where do I send the check, for Christ's
sake?
Holy cow.
I was very flattered. I'm like, woo, that was just, thank you. What more can I say on that one?
Really. And our culture in general, and the gay community in particular, seems to have a myopic view of male beauty. And it all is about being young and buff and hairless, but you fly in the face of that narrow worldview. Why is that so?
You know, that's absolutely right. It's interesting because when I submitted my imagery for the book, Daddy Hunt, they had one question. They said, can we ask you why you chose these type of males rather than very young, cute boys that are hairless and muscular? And I said, well, that is the dynamic of San Francisco and most of my models. And to be honest with you, this is a dynamic that should be portrayed and seen more. And it's attractive. It doesn't matter what age you are, 25 or 65, you own it. And there's always someone out there for you, or in a lot of cases, more than one.
Right, with a little luck.
Yeah, so that whole, and they've embraced it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are enjoying this. This is like the welcome back of, you know,
right,
the
more natural kind
male.
Of thing. Absolutely, absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that expanded appreciation of what is erotic really helps folks appreciate, you know, the tremendous variety that is out there in terms of male beauty and masculinity and all those kinds of things. And if we're not careful, we do really close ourselves off from stuff that we ought not do, it seems to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of people love, and I do love youth and muscle and that view of things. I think there's beautiful artwork in it.
Yes.
But as you mentioned, that's one view. There are many,
yeah.
And why not present as many as we can?
Right. And at the same time, it seems to me that without a little balance, you know, the youth and beauty and buff and hairless, you know, really becomes cliche. And
then it loses its importance.
Yes, exactly.
As well.
That. Exactly. Good, good, good. For those who missed your first turn on our show, can you give us a little bio? Tell us lots of interesting things about yourself, where you were born and raised in school. Do you like muscle magazines and gladiator movies?
Oh, gladiator movies.
do you have a husband, a partner, a pet? Those kinds of things.
That was great. Well, I was originally born and raised on the East Coast and absolutely loved it, but it was time to live the life of adventure. So I went to school down in Florida in an academy and was hired straight out of school to get a job in L.A., which
wow.
was like palm trees, ocean, you know, and a wonderful, wonderful, diverse area to explore your sexuality. That was a blast. I had lots of fun in every sense of the word. And then I, over time, moved around quite a bit. I got jobs in the travel industry. I got to go all over the world and taste all the exotic flavors, as it were. Cool experiences. And that was so much fun, and it was such a great learning experience. And then when I came back, I got heavily into the leather community as I started in L.A., Texas, but most importantly in Phoenix, where I ran for a number of titles and held them in leadership positions in the leather community and got involved in the national and international leather community at that point. And that's where some of the inspiration for these books came from helping people.
Yeah.
A lot of people do it on stage. They're very public. I've done the auctions and been a MC and done all that. And then there comes a time where you do more one-on-one or you find a different venue
right.
to help. And this is just a different venue.
Right. Good, good, good. So speaking of which, and which makes for a great segue into my next series of questions, and that is about your latest book, Primal Fear. It's getting a great deal of buzz, and rightfully so. In fact, your publisher, who just so happens to be my publisher too, was all a flutter, don't you know? And he's not the fluttering type, as you well know.
You know him well.
No fluttering. Not a whole lot of fluttering, anyhow. So first... tell me about the stunning cover.
Oh, that was fun. I love my publisher. He's the best.
Isn't he grand?
Presented, yeah, four pieces of artwork, and I wanted something with a heavy power play on it. And he picked out this particular image, and as soon as I saw it, I said, that's it.
All right.
That's the one.
Wow.
So I was really pleased with that.
Great. So that's not your artwork?
No, there was a contemplation about putting my artwork on it, but when I saw this piece,
yeah.
I said, this is it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people would say, well, you're a photographer. You could use your photography for the cover. Like, yeah, but why?
Yes. Right, right, right. When you hit upon something that absolutely fits or strikes, you know, just that perfect note, it's hard to turn your attention away, for sure.
Yeah, and this was it. It has... a combination of two males, and there's a nice heavy power dynamic in it, and I'm like, this is it. This just fits.
Very
cool. So, yeah, I was really happy to see that.
So you write in the foreword, mm-hmm. after my mentor, my guide, I felt I was finished, or so I thought. I said all I wanted to say. However, much to my surprise, people kept approaching me with the question, when is part two of my mentor coming out? Which I kindly replied, sorry, but I don't see it coming. My feeling was I didn't want to write just to fill a bunch of pages. I write to share a message, and I wanted to offer a roadmap for those looking for answers. Time passed, and I forgot all about it. Then fate stepped in, as it often does, and caught me by surprise. I was having lunch with a friend, and the conversation drifted into the topic of fear. Instead of avoiding it, we discussed it at great length, and from that conversation came the inspiration for this book. So what, you don't write just to crank out books? That's a novel concept.
Yeah. Well, I was like, well, you know, it's a little tough filling pages if you don't have anything to write about.
True. It's like, it's certainly true.
You got to feel passionate about something. Right. And when we got into this lunch, you know, I was with a very good friend, Lance Navarro,
right.
which you know,
previous
wonderful
guest,
guy. Right. Yeah, previous guest. And he is in the adult industry, and we were talking about how his clients would be coming over and their partners would not know about it. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, they're afraid of losing something or their partner, and so they don't tell them. And I said, that's it. It's all about fear, isn't it? And he's like, yeah. And then we start talking about different things that you're afraid of. And I said, well, how about if I play the devil's advocate on this? I said, well, fear is also an attraction, isn't it? You know, you really shouldn't be doing this, but... And he's like, yes, it is so cool.
So just to elaborate on that a bit, fear is this amazing emotion. We both are drawn to it, for example, by the popularity of horror films and carnival rides, as well as being repulsed by it, by our fear of snakes or death or anything else that alarms us.
Absolutely. It's a two-edged sword when you think about it, because it has a very useful purpose for keeping our bodies from physical harm or injury. You know, it's like a hot stove. You know, kids learn to be afraid to touch that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very primal thing. You don't have to have rocket science to know that one. But on the other side, it attracts us because it gets our hearts pumping and our senses peaked, and it gets us in touch with that primal side of our humanity.
Right. That's amazing. So I guess that's what you were getting at when you wrote, fear is gripping, it can paralyze, it can force people to do things they normally wouldn't do. Many are repulsed by it because of the trepidation it causes, but has many facets due to its unique nature. Therefore, few choose to explore its depths. I can understand why it awakens in us those primal forces that we fought so hard to control and contain. Yet we all acknowledge it is there. If we are caught off guard, we know that fear can unexpectedly take control. For many, this thought frightens them most of all. However, there are other aspects of this ancient force. For some, it has the ability to excite and even arouse. And I think you've really nailed it there. So let's talk about the excitement and arousing nature of fear. Isn't that exactly the basis of like BDSM and power play?
Yes, you're right. The exchange of power is in BDSM scene is a key element. However, if you harness the power of fear along with it, the intensity is increased dramatically.
Right.
You know, you've stacked this second level on, you know.
Right. So like really if somebody is doing a scene and they pretty much know what the scene is going to be involving, and you know there's one level of excitement, but if the person doesn't know what's coming next, you know, and that anticipatory fear really raises the stakes.
Yep, it's raising the bar. It's adding in that extra element, because then you start getting some of the chemical reactions. The adrenaline starts flooding in. Now you're going to get endorphins for any kind of pain-type sex thing involving flogging and that, because that's a natural bodily response. However, there is peak hormones when you're in the fight or flight. right. type of thing.
Right.
And you're tapping into those.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
So maybe this is a good place as any for you to tell us what you mean by primal fear. Like, how is primal fear different from your, you know, everyday ordinary variety?
That was fun. I had to, what I usually do when I have to come up with a definition, I want it to pertain to the material that I'm covering, because fear in general, like you said, has got so many facets. There's so many fears. And then I'm thinking primal. So I went to Webster's Dictionary and I took
a good place to start.
Oh, yes. Everybody on the same page, you know. And I went ahead and looked up primal first, and it says original, primitive, village life continued in its primal innocence, first in importance and primary. So, okay, if you're talking about primal, we're talking about something that's original, primitive, and primary. I also like some of the synonyms they had in there, which were greatest, supreme, and dominant. No matter how you look at it, you understand the level of importance of the subject matter that follows.
Right.
Now let's take a look at fear. I went to dictionary.com, and it says a distressing emotion aroused by impending danger, evil, pain, etc. Whether the threat is real or imagined, the feeling or condition of being afraid. And I thought, wow, the thing that really got me was whether the threat is real or imagined.
Yes, I thought so too.
So, yeah, I thought, okay, that has equal amount of power, even though the person is actually not physically being harmed.
Right.
So I put the two together, and I said, for the purposes of this book, I'd like to present primal fear with a slightly different definition. A distressing emotion aroused by impending danger, whether the threat be physical, emotional, or from our deeply rooted primitive desires, the Freudian id, or what I like to refer to as the dragon, whether the threat be real or imagined.
Very cool. Now, just because I can, because it's my own fucking show, don't you know? I'm going to see if I can prevail upon you to read something from your book. Because at the very beginning, I mentioned that this book is fictional nonfiction. And I think this is such a heady mixture that even though we're talking about something very interesting and has a very strong academic aspect to it, the erotic aspect is equally compelling.
Oh, well, I wanted to challenge the reader. There are a lot of people that have heavy moral standards on what's socially, ethically,
right.
and so on, acceptable. And they, this is saying, okay, it's good to have this.
Mm-hmm.
However, let's put you in a place, and if it's making you squirm in your seat, ask yourself why. And are the reasons you're squirming valid, or is it out of fear? A fear that's no longer, you know, I hate to use the word valid again, but outdated.
Right.
Or, yeah, any number of reasons, and it's preventing you from exploring your sexuality more deeply.
Wow.
And in owning it and saying, okay, I'd like to get out there and try this. It's funny because it reminds me of the old saying, desires inspire action. However, actions often are dominated by our desires.
Right.
It's that oh-so-familiar feeling of being on the roller coaster with the bonus of an orgasm thrown in. You know, I love it and I want more.
Exactly.
Well, this brings me to the reading of one of those particular times where it's that dichotomy of having a desire and the fear of being caught, you know, or something going wrong. It reminds me of a time when I got picked up one winter's night by a construction worker. He was very hot, and I was still very nervous about what to say in order to get my point across regarding what I wanted. After all, I didn't want to be the victim of a bashing. I love blue-collar rough trade types, which made this little dance even riskier. However, I couldn't help myself. Once I got that first dick, I knew I was a total cockhound. I loved sucking, and I was always trying to take the biggest that came my way. This guy was no exception. Tall, lean, and muscular. When he pulled up, he rolled down the window and asked, "How far are you going?" with a slight smile. He had a deep voice, which was rich in testosterone. This was a good sign. As far as you can take me, I replied with a smirk. His expression changed to surprise, and he said, okay, get in. My heart began to race as I opened the door and jumped in. I knew I just used one of the worst come-on lines ever, but it was too late to turn back. I was now on the roller coaster. I looked over at his crotch as I closed the door and swung and saw a huge bulge in his dirty, faded jeans. The window went up and the dome light went out. The view was reduced to the glow of the dash lights. He had his jacket off and the heater on. His scent filled the front seats. I couldn't stop myself from getting hard. His man scent filled my nostrils and flooded my senses. I knew the time had come for us to talk. The hair on the back of my neck was on its end and my cock was growing tight in my jeans. I had worked out a little routine and hoped it would work just one more time. I wanted this one bad. So which way? He said, breaking the silence. I was so lost in my thoughts, I was startled. I quickly directed him off the main highway to a road which had no houses or regular traffic. As he turned off the slow two-lane country freeway, he took one of his big hands and adjusted his crotch. Then he placed it on the seat back between us. That's it, I thought, the signal I've been waiting for. I could feel a warm patch of pre-cum wet on my leg. Soon it would be showing through my jeans. I knew I had to move fast to cover, or my cover was blown. It was time to take the big leap. We soon hit a stretch of road that was deserted. This is good, I said with a smile and pointed to the side of the road. As he put both hands on the wheel to pull over, I looked down to get one last look at his crotch. There it was. The outline of his huge, hard shaft. He wanted it as bad as I did, but would he follow through? At this point, I didn't care if he saw my throbbing cock and the ever-growing wet spot patch I was sporting. I strategically shifted it into view. After he pulled over, he placed his arm back where it had once been and turned to face me. The scent of his pits hit me full force, and I fought to keep control. You sure I can't drop you off at your place? He said. Oh, I'm fine. It's just a short walk from here, I replied. Sure, okay then, he said, not wondering what to say next. Oh, did you spill something on your pants? I said, and reached over to brush off the newly formed wet spot on his pants. His body stiffened in surprise. That? He replied, his body still tense as I touched his shaft through his jeans. I think it needs a little attention, he said in a slightly nervous voice. Yeah, I think you're right, he replied, as I unfastened his seatbelt and began to massage his throbbing mass through his jeans. And I'll just leave it at that. And it was funny, because in that story, he's very, very nervous, and he looks out the window, and I say, I whisper to him, there's no one that's on this road. Close your eyes and relax. It'll be okay. And he grabs the steering wheel on the back of the seat, and closes his eyes as I begin to pull his cock out of his pants, and he's trembling the whole time. And I was like, yes, I've got him, but I've got to get this before he flips out and freaks because I may not get another chance, you know?
Right. Boy, that's the quintessential gay fantasy, is it not? Holy cow.
Mm-hmm. And that was my teen years.
It only gets worse in there, huh?
It only goes worse from there. You're absolutely right.
Oh, dear.
It's just got a little more creative and more creative.
Oh, gosh. What a note to leave this on. But I'm just looking at my clock, and I see that our time for today is up.
Oh.
I'm going to have to go back and find that chapter. And if you could give us your website address and tell us where we can find that book, we will be reading it in between now and when we speak again, hopefully next week.
Terrific. Okay. It is www.bladetbannon.com, and that Blade T. Bannon is all strung together.
Right.
And if you go on there and you just press on the icon for the book, it immediately takes you over to Amazon.
Oh, cool. Good.
And you can get it ordered as a book or as a Kindle.
Great. Outstanding.
Yeah.
So, you will be able to return next week because I got a whole bunch more questions, and I'm going to prevail upon you to read again next week.
Oh, yes, definitely, because the next story that I have in mind is really a fun one.
All right, Slate. Thank you so much for this time. We will be visiting you in cyberspace in the interim, and talk to you again soon. Thank you.
All right, take care now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
What a fantastic show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at this same time for part two of my chat with Blade Bannon and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is the fabulous Fleshlight and Fleshjack. You know, all you guys out there who keep complaining to me about your short fuse, well, here's a tip for you. Being a great lover, being able to control your orgasmic response and last for as long as you'd like, takes practice. Sure, you can learn how to last longer simply by using your hand, but now there's an even more effective way to train yourself for sexual stamina and endurance with a partner.
Wouldn't this be a great world if insecurity and desperation made us more attractive?
I feel your pain. Allow me to introduce you to the Endurance Jack. It's just one of the fine designs from Fleshlight. It comes with the Stamina insert, which has extra large bumps and a tight canal. With just a little practice with this puppy, you'll be able to last longer, gain control over your ejaculatory response, and avoid untimely climax. Once you've accomplished this with the Endurance Jack, you'll have all the skills that you need to last and last with a partner. And remember, these fine products are made in the good old US of A. And if you make your purchase by clicking on the Fleshjack banner in the sidebar of drdicksexadvice.com, a portion of that sale will come back to us as support for these shows. Now you can help underwrite this important sex-positive effort and jerk off at the same time. How fun is that? Okay, until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.